I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, John M. from Tustin.
Hey, everybody. I'm John McCabe, and I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, I'd like to welcome our friends that are new, that stood up. I'd like to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you'll quickly learn that I am not an authority on Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been lucky enough to be sober for 18 years. My sobriety date is August 27th, 1995, and I've been an active member. And what I'll try and do is share a little bit about what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today. And but if you're new, I want a special let you know that if you're uncomfortable and you're not sure what this is all about or whatever, or maybe you didn't stand up and you're out there, I want you to know that my heart goes out to you, and because people were very kind to me on my very first meeting, and I've been lucky enough to be sober since my very first meeting, and I see that as a direct result of people applying the 12th step and trying to be aware of the still suffering alcoholic that's in these rooms. And so with that, I'll get into my story. So I was raised an Irish Catholic kid. We always had wine at the table, you know. So it was like, I can remember, like, you know, third grade, second grade, you know, I would get my glass of wine. It was just not a big deal, you know. My dad was in the stock brokerage business, and he would go in and restructure companies. So we ended up moving a lot. And the first time I remember that effect produced by alcohol is my dad had gotten a big promotion, and we were going to Chicago. And it was in the 70s, and I was obsessed with the Fonz, you know, Fonzie. And, you know, because I kind of had a huge ego right from the start. My sister is crying in the car because we're leaving our friends one more time. And I was way too cool. You know, if you see me, I'd be like, hey, you know what I mean? And, that's kind of the mentality. So I couldn't, you know, cry. And, we went out and we had this super fancy meal, Chateaubriand, and they brought this red Bordeaux wine. And even as a little kid, I saw my dad as he's not an alcoholic, but I saw how he ordered the wine, and the waiter comes by and shows him the bottle. You know what I mean? It looked cool. You know what I mean? Even at that little kid, it looked cool. It was just cool, you know? And so my mom and dad were kind of into their talk about his big promotion, and my sister's still crying. And so, you know, I just took the glass and poured a little bit more in my glass. And, you know, no big deal. Just drank it down. And then they were still talking, and I kept drinking, you know. And I remember what I didn't call it that then, but the click. You know what I mean? It was just that click of I went from being all sad and bummed out to instantly, like, one of the best days of my entire life, you know. And you know, I walked into the walls on the way back to the hotel room, but I don't know if conscious, and none of this was conscious, but I knew the power of alcohol, you know what I mean? Like, it took me from here to there and just a few glasses, like, that's it, you know? And so it wasn't like the next day I was drinking every single day. That's not my story. But that extreme self-centeredness definitely was part of my story. And you know, what happened is my sister, she got really, really, really sick. She got a very rare disease called Guillain-Barré syndrome when I was in high school. And for those of you who don't know, it's one of those diseases where she could just stop breathing at any moment, you know. And I remember sitting there, you know, in her bedroom listening to her, because it felt like nobody was paying attention, you know, just listening to her to see if she'd stop breathing. And the kind of person I am is that's the story that I use to pick up girls, you know. And you know, I would tell them this story of woe, and they, you know, think I'm very sensitive, and, you know, and so, you know, I got a lot of attention over that. And You know, at this time, my mom would always say, you know what kind of attitude you have, John? And I'd look at her and I'm, no. And she says, you got the I'm all right, Jack attitude. And I'm like, yeah. And so what ended up going on is that I was obsessed with going into the entertainment industry, and I wanted to be an actor. And so I auditioned for this school that was really, really hard to get into. And, I was lucky enough to get in. But it was a theater school, you know, and yet, you know, I was a surfer and, you know, and there was like these theater people, and we were in, you know, St. Louis of all places, and not a good place. And so, you know, it was like one of those things where, you know, I would drink and just get a little bit of relief. But there was this one dorm room that was like down the hall, and it was like the cool kid dorm room, you know. And they were drinking and doing drugs. And I was never, ever, 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 you know, going to do any of that other stuff, you know. And so, you know, there I was, bored one night. I took the drink and showed up, and the second best moment of my life was going back and forth. We were into Eric B and Rakim, and I remember, you know, looking at a mirror, because that's like the best thing in the world for an alcoholic, and I remember looking at this dorm mirror and bouncing back and forth, you know, listening to Eric B and Rakim, and like best moment ever, you know. And now what's happening is that the movie had come out with the Hustler, you know, the sequel to the Hustler, and I was obsessed with pool, and so we would go down to the St. Louis bars, and I would get money for food and stuff from my uncle, because it was like really expensive to go to the school, and then I'd go down there and think I was like hustling everybody in pool, and really I was just giving them all my uncle's money. And what happened was we were driving back, you know, because I had this really, really good friend. And if you're an alcoholic, you start drinking like I am, you know, the book talks about, you know, lower companions, you know, and this guy was real, you know. We just drank hard, you know, hard liquor, you know, forget the beer, forget the pansy stuff, you know, and just whiskey, you know. And so we were driving back, and this guy had cut us off. And, you know, I'm a kid from the suburbs, man. I never got in a single fight. You know, I would let somebody else fight for me. You know what I mean? And so he cut us off in this kind of really bad area, St. Louis. And my friend and I, you know, hey, you know, and we roll down the window. And the guy pulled my friend out through the window and then grabbed a butcher knife and stabbed them all and he looked at me and he calmly said, you know, are you going to come? And I froze, you know, and I just ran to my friend. I didn't approach him. And I ran to my friend and I did one of these things where I'm trying to hold in the blood. And that's not social drinking, you know. And so I'm there and they had called 911 and they got him, you know, in the car, and I literally had just blood all over me, you know. It's one of those things, and I know all of us have had this, where you're just struck sober, you know. And I remember, you know, they gave me his keys, and I'm like, I don't know where I am, I don't know anything, and I drive back. I mean, I look like, you know, the carry, you know what I mean? It's blood everywhere, and I walk into the dorm room, and people are like, what the hell happened to you? And I go, Rob, I don't know. And that's not a good feeling, where you can't remember what the ambulance guy tells you where your quote unquote best friend is. You know what I mean? That's not cool, you know? And so we're dialing around trying to find out what happened to him. And he ended up living, you know, they removed his lung and, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, but he ended up living. And so, you know, now I, Bill talks about this where, you know, I'm having a tough time differentiating the true from the false. I can't quite figure things out. I'm you know, school is like, and becoming like a great actor is like really, really important to me, you know, and I'm drinking all at the wrong times, you know, and, you know, I remember there was a real thing that at the end of 2 years, they cut half the kids, and it was a thing called a cut scene. And I remember, you know, the night before, briefly, just for a second, of going, oh, yeah, I can drink that. And that I came to, and I'd been kicked out. And the lady tells me that maybe I should be a stuntman. You know what I mean? And, you know, if you're trying to be an actor, that's not the best news. And so I had this big story because, you know, I have a learning disability, you know. And so what they really had done is they had discriminated against me. And so I had this whole thing. And I remember, you know, on the plane, you know, drinking, you know what I mean, trying to get my story right. And I go back to Daddy and I sit down. I'm like, Dad, here's what we're going to have to sue them. And he goes, hey, what I didn't know is he had called ahead to the school and actually got a little bit, because, I mean, teachers were looking at me and just going, John, you're weird. You know what I mean? Like they were really, they couldn't figure me out. And so my dad said, John, you know, do you ever think maybe you should just get a real job? And it was like, you know what I mean? Like I couldn't believe my father, you know, and so just like Bill in the book, you know, I'll show you, you know, and I had that uncle's money and I was going to go out to LA and become somebody, you know, I don't need even my father, you know, and I remember I came out to LA I had come out with a friend who said, hey, man, let's not drink. And I remember going, and he goes, yeah, you know, I got, you know, some parents, they're alcoholics, and it's probably good that we don't drink. And I remember going, and he goes, let's give it a shot. And I'm like, okay, all right. And so I actually got a little bit of work, you know what I mean? I for just a little bit of time, I was making my living at my dream, you know. But the problem is, people like me, you know, I started getting really wound up tight, you know what I mean? The book describes it as restless, irritable, and discontent, you know. And I just wanted to punch things, you know. And just everybody irritated me. And that friend of mine, you know, I had this great idea of go out to Vegas and just keep doubling my money on black. That was like, so I took all that money and I'm just going to keep doubling it. And this is like the perfect idea. And within 20 minutes, I had lost all my money and I was mad. And it was just, and I remember getting in a fist fight with the guy, falling out of the car in going down the Vegas Strip, you know, and I'm sober, you know, so I'm done with this whole thing, and so I moved down. There was a famous teacher that had taught at Yale, and I wanted to move down to Newport Beach and go to UCI, and I'd gotten some lucky deal where I got to work with the graduate class, even though I was undergrad, and so, you know, the problem is that now I'm drinking all the time, you know, I mean, every day, and I'm just, you know, I'm living on 17th Street in Newport, and, you know, I'm drinking at this place called the Stag Bar, you know, it's that kind of bar, and I don't know if you guys had this, where you'd go to the bar before you went out, and then that'd be the bar, right, you know, the last bar that you'd go to, and like I didn't want to go to too many, like, I had to get somewhat there before I would actually see the friends that were hardcore drinkers, but they weren't drinkers like I was a drinker. I mean, I remember that going to the Stag Bar and I forgot my ID, and I go up to the Stag Bar and I'm like, oh, I don't have my ID, to the bouncer guy. And he goes, John, you come in here every night. You think we're not going to know who you are, you know? So what happens is that I have to go to this junior college, and I picked this junior college that I went to up in L.A. and because I had to get some credits to go to UCI, and I met who would become my wife, and just this beautiful woman who ended up, you know, I don't know how, you know, saying yes when, you know, when I asked her out, and you know, she just had no idea what she was getting into, you know. And so I would always try and, like, clean up when she would come down to Newport and everything. And I remember walking, like, out where the beach ball is and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just, you know, in front of Mutt Lynch's, you know, just walking with her and everything. And my friends would be on their skateboards or anything. They look at me and they go, man, when's the real McCabe going to come out, you know? And I'm like, shut up, man. And you know, that Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing. And so what had ended up happening, of course, she started quickly getting on to, you know, the kind of person I am. And you know, you can only fool somebody for so long. And then the fights started, you know, just horrible fights, you know. I like to pretty this up, but I got to tell the truth, you know. I'm the kind of person that takes the most intimate things that somebody shares with me, and I use that against them so that I can drink more, you know. And so you know, the problem is I kept waking up with this unbelievable guilt. You know what I mean? Like, ugh, you know, oh, man. And this had gone on, you know, and I remember looking at her and saying, you know, Melissa, I'm, you know, I'm really gonna cut back, you know, and she goes, oh, really? And I said, yeah. And she goes, okay, well, how about 2 drinks? And I remember going, absolutely, I can do that. And so what I did, and I made it clear, is I got the 64 ounces from, you know, the huge super big gulp size stuff. And I said, you said 2. And so I would pour, you know, the vodka in and then make something that doesn't know how much vodka I have in there. And you know, make her a little fruity drink or whatever and give it to her. And then I also got, for, you know, the after dinner drinks didn't count, you know. And so I would wake up with this orange, you know, breath because I was drinking so much Grand Marnier, you know, because it had the most kick going to it. But the problem is that I just, now I'm unreliable, you know, and I'm getting crazier and crazier and riddled with more and more and more guilt because the fights are just horrible, you know. And, you know, I remember right before we got married, I remember her, you know, walking out and me just screaming at her in front of the apartment complex you know, people looking at the, you're not having a good night when a complete stranger says, you know, excuse me, ma'am, are you okay? You know what I mean? Like, that's, that you're not a class act at that point. Just horrible. And now, you know, because I told her I would stop, and I can't stop, and that guilt and that remorse, and I was a waiter, you know, because driving up to L.A. for the auditions, it was just such a freaking hassle, you know what I mean? I mean, who has time for that, you know? I was working at Ruby's, and I remember one particular night. Where I sat, I said to the manager, "Hey, I need a little bit of your time." And he goes, "Okay." And we went back into a room, and I said, "Just wanted to let you know, I'm not going to be working here anymore." And he goes, "Okay." And I go, "I'm going to be taking my life." And he goes, "Okay." Like, you know, it was to the point where he didn't know what to tell me. You know what I'm saying? I was so crazy. It's like, get out of here, you know? And so I was there and I'd gotten it together, you know, I'd stopped another, you know, being a pothead. We got married, and I remember there, my wife finds out that her mom has cancer, and they had to go in and just do major surgery, remove several organs. They literally weren't sure if she was going to live or die. And I remember lying right next to her, looking her right in the eyes, and saying that I'm going to be here for you. We're going to walk through this together. And I meant it, you know. The next day, a friend of mine called me up and said he was going to be on The Tonight Show. And afterwards, we were going to go out drinking and go with some supermodels. Did I want to go? And I'm like, absolutely. And so I remember she's packing to go for mom. She looked over at me and she said, "You're not packing." And I go, "No, I have the sniffles." And it was like we couldn't fight about it anymore, you know. And she just finished up. I said, "I'll be by the phone for you," you know. She didn't even look me in the eye anymore. And she just finished packing up her stuff. And I remember the door shutting. I remember her walking out. I remember her walking down the stairs. I remember the car starting. I remember the car driving away. And I got to get up to L.A. And I didn't think of her for 1 second after that. All I was thinking about is the beer that my friend had told me was ice cold and waiting for me the second I walked through that door. And I remember just driving up like a madman, opening the door, and there was that Heineken right there like he promised. And I remember drinking that down and went into another blackout, you know. I remember briefly meeting Don Rickles and then I remember I was watching his television and a drug that I don't even know what it was, no idea. I just remember I was watching Star Trek and everybody was melting. And then I had this quick little moment, just this quick little moment of like a little check. You know, I got a glimpse of it just for a second of who and what I was, just for a second. I remember, you just drink through that, you know. And so what I did is I just drank again, and the next thing I know, I'm in Laguna Beach. And it's a day and a half later, and I'm at a poetry slam contest because since I wasn't going to make it as an actor, I thought I would be a writer and this, you know, really cool beat poet guy. And so I'm there at this bookstore, and I'm reading poetry, and I lost. And, you know, sit down. And I walk out, and I'm walking down Main Street in Laguna, and the buddy of mine who's was my drinking buddy for a long time, but he had gotten sober in AA, and he sees me, and he goes, "Hey, John." And I look over at him because I didn't know where I parked. I mean, I had no idea where I, you know. And he goes, "How you doing?" And I looked at him, and I went, he goes, "How's Melissa's mom?" And it hit me. And I walked into the payphone, and I dialed my message machine. And there on my message machine was my wife saying that her mom had died on the table and they had brought her back, but they weren't sure. And where was I? I said I was going to be by the phone. And her dad was there, and she had never seen her dad cry. And where was I? And I remember putting the phone down, turning around, and walking out, and walking straight out into the water. And my best idea was to take my life. I just couldn't live with the person that I was. And I want you to know, I said a prayer to a God that I absolutely didn't believe in. Because what kind of God would have my sister suffer the way that I perceived she suffered? And I just said, God, I don't believe in you, but I'll do anything. And it wasn't like the heavens opened up or anything like that. I just turned around and walked back. And as I was walking back, felt about this big. And that same friend who had seen me looked at me and he goes, John, come here, man, come here. And I told him just a tiny little bit of the truth. And if you're somebody like me, man, that was a big deal. And I just told him just a little bit of what's really going on. And he goes, wow. And he goes, did you ever think that you may be an alcoholic? And I remember looking at him and going, no, I drink every day. And he just stood with me and he goes, well, yeah. And he goes, here's a card of a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know, maybe he could help. And I remember looking at the card and he goes, why did you call him? And I went around back to that same, you know, payphone, and I call this guy, and this guy starts talking about his story, and his story is exactly like my story. And I thought, did he tell this guy what's going on? How the heck? And like the time element thing didn't quite add up, you know. And he was just, today he was just sharing me what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like today. And all of a sudden he said, "Do you want to go to a meeting?" And I said, "Okay." And he goes, "I'll pick you up." And I went to my first meeting and. And I never want to forget what that felt like because I go in and he had told everybody this is my first AA meeting ever. And so people were coming up to me going, hey, are you John? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, welcome. I felt like a celebrity. You know what I mean? It was awesome. You know what I mean? I was like making people's day, you know, and they were giving me their cards. I was looking down, and they like had jobs and everything. And I couldn't believe it. And there was this guy who got up to the podium who shared about being in solitary confinement. And I'd never been to jail, but I absolutely identified. I absolutely identified with what he said. I knew it was just a matter of time. There's no doubt it was the PD had. You know, let me give you a quick little glimpse of how I lived. You know, my car, personal hygiene just wasn't real high up on the list. And so, you know, the car that I drove in would have just hamburgers and just things in the car. And like my friends had put a full dead fish in my car and it had liquefied for 3 days. And I didn't even know because it that's how bad my car was. And you know, I remember being down in Mexico and, you know, they go to, you know, try and find some, you know, foreign substance in the car and they open it up and, like that. And that saved me that night, you know. So I just couldn't believe that people with jobs were giving me their card and everyone was talking about, get a sponsor, you got to get a sponsor, you better get a sponsor. And I'm like, I didn't know what a sponsor was, you know what I mean? And then they're like, you, over there. And me? And they said, come on up, like that. And this is a meeting, the Corona Del Mar Men's Stag meeting, and there's like over 200 guys there. And I get up to the podium, and I didn't know you're supposed to say you're an alcoholic. I didn't know anything, and I'm standing up there. And what happened was, is I started crying. And I swear it was like 5 minutes. And then finally someone from the front row says, hey, are you an alcoholic? And I said, yeah, my name's John and I'm an alcoholic. And the whole room, you know, it was just... And so I get downstairs, and there's a guy laughing. So you want to know how I picked my sponsor? I picked my sponsor because he was the guy that was laughing. He was talking to another old-timer, Ted Harbuck, and he's passed on, and they were laughing, and I said, what about him, to the guy who brought me? And he says, well, that guy's hardcore. And he goes through the steps, and, you know, and I'm like, all right. And so I said, you know, hey, my name's John, you know, will you be my sponsor? And he goes, all right, well, I'll meet you the next day. And he says, I'll meet you at Benji's restaurant. You live in Tustin, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he says, that's right around your house, isn't it? And I go, yeah. And he goes, all right, well, I'll see you there. And so I show up there, and in that car, you know, and he makes me always say this. The other thing is that I didn't have any tread on the tires. Like, it was just the steel, like literally the steel, like things were sticking out and everything. And so, you know, we went off to a meeting, and he did something after that meeting that I believe saved my life, which is, you know, first he got me a big book, right? And then afterwards, he comes out and he goes, you know what? You seem pissed off. And I go, I am. I'm very, very pissed off. And he goes, great, hold on a second. He gets this piece of paper out. And he goes, what is it? And I said, well, it's her. And he goes, oh, great, great. He writes it down like that. And he goes, and tell me about it. He says, well, she's doing this. And he write it down and everything. And what does it affect? Well, it makes me angry. And, oh, great, great, great. And he goes, okay, and what's your part? And I go, well, I don't really think I have a part at all in this. And he goes, well, in AA, we always have a part. And I went, well... And I waited and waited, and then I remember saying something like, well, I guess I was a little insensitive or something like that. And then he wrote it down. He goes, good, good, good. And I remember driving back, and I know it today, of the message had depth and weight because something was different. You know, it's not like that solved all the world's problems, but it was just something was different. And I remember, this is different. And I would get in the car, and my home group was a Bellflower Big Book group, and we'd be driving up to the meeting. And I don't know if you're new, you identify with this, but I'd have this real issue of whatever it was, and I'd be wanting to tell them, and because it was an hour drive, or you know, and I couldn't really tell them, right, because I got to look good. And then I'd hear a speaker, and the speaker was just sharing from his heart. And then on the way back, I'd finally tell him. And you know what he did? He did the most valuable gift in AA. He gave me his time. And, you know, we went through the steps. And, you know, I got a chance to you know, be there for my wife when her mother did die. And be there with our two children and have them taken care of. And, you know, I got to make amends for my father for being just a jerk, and I got to do some things that got involved in my home group with commitments and trying to sponsor guys. And what ended up happening is about 4.5 years ago, my wife got in an accident, and you hear this stuff from the podium, and frankly, when I'm sitting out there, half of me doesn't believe it, and. What she was paralyzed from the waist down, and you know, I got two kids, and she's like the super mom, you know, and I'm there in the hospital, and you know, it was tough, and I had gone home for the first time, and we were getting the kids some clothes and stuff, and I opened the door, and I let the cat out, and I lost the cat, you know, our family cat, like. Freaking their mom's in the hospital and I lose the cat, you know, and all I did is I called a friend of mine in my home group and I just said, I frickin' lost the cat. And that's it. And I went, you know, I'm back in. We're trying to get everything coordinated. And all of a sudden, I walk outside. And there's 12 people from my home group with flashlights. And if that's not God, I don't know what is. You know what I mean? That all I didn't even ask them. And they were there trying to find the cat, which we did find eventually. And they did things like they brought me food, and you know, I was there. I had to shave my wife's legs, and I had a real, there was a big secret, you know what I mean? Like, everything was okay, and I'm fine, and thanks for the concern. And I had to ask a woman in my home group how to do that, you know? And, you know, thank God people share from the heart here, because I have about, still to this day, way too much pride to ask stuff like that of people. And it's as a result of people sharing from the heart and being good, solid members that I know that, you know, my God gets to work through people like you all. And the good news is after many surgeries, my wife's no longer paralyzed, and, you know, life is good. And you know, well, the reality is that, you know, AA has to always be number one in my life. You know, I have to keep the consistency. You know what I mean? I have to stay active and available and aware. You know, because I don't know if there's somebody out there in my meetings and not get too caught up in my friends, because I'm lucky enough that I got a lot of friends in AA, a lot of people to talk to, and it's like, what I try and do at a meeting is very, very simple. You know, I try to look for anyone that's standing by themselves or sitting alone and go and share with them, not try to be sober man, you know what I mean? You know, just like, you know, share from my heart, you know, and tell them some of the stuff that I'm doing, and hear, listen, there's an idea, you know, listen to how somebody else is doing. And be willing to stay small enough, you know, where I can, you know, still get my ass kicked and not be a little wussy and leave, you know, my home group, you know, have enough chance to learn, you know, when I'm so convinced that I'm right on whatever the hell I'm wrong about. You know, I'll tell you know, it has served me well. You know, I had that dream of one day doing some stuff, and Nothing's big or anything like that, but I have since, just a couple of years ago, got to start to live that dream again. I'm still doing the regular day job, nothing. But from my heart, it's back. You know what I mean? I you can do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous if Alcoholics Anonymous stays number one in your life. And I really, really want to appreciate and thank the old timers who have still stayed here and continue to be active, because I need to always see that. And again, if you're new, you know, I hope to God that tonight you walk out with, you know, putting your hand out and saying, will you help me, to someone, you know, because I found that it works, and it works really, really, really well. And I thank you, Damien, for asking me to talk, and great, you know, 10 minute, great job, and happy birthday to the three birthday people and the people that, you know, are new. Again, I really, really hope that Alcoholics Anonymous becomes your way of life. Thank you. Yeah.